Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how progesterone can help protect the lungs during flu season. A study from Johns Hopkins University. And how about 15 almonds a day can make a big difference in your health? And ginseng may be one of the factors that can lessen dementia. And also how a high calcium, low lactose diet, that's your non-dairy diet, may reduce the risk of ovarian cancer in African American women. That's from Rutgers Cancer Institute. And how vitamin C prevents side effects from the MMR vaccine by Helen Saul Case, and more. For example, does physical activity lower the risk of bacterial infections? The answer is yes. So we have a lot on health and healing today. Also, we're going to look at some things on artificial sweeteners, and then we're going to look at the debate, and I'm going to share some observations, and then open it up for you to share yours as well. So you'll have a chance to call in and tell us what you think about what they were saying and what our country actually needs. Also today, I'm going to have you listen to an audio clip from an Irish legislator in their parliament talking about how so many different politicians cater to the United States, allow their country to be used as a point of weapons transfer. And those weapons ultimately are used in conflict zones which destroy human lives. No one wants to examine that. No one wants to take responsibility. What does that say about the legislators? I think it's a very powerful statement. Also, I've been very concerned about asset forfeiture. In fact, it's so big now that it dwarfs all other organized crime in a given year. This is where the agents of the U.S. government, such as police officers, will stop you and simply confiscate everything you have on you, your car, anything. They can always use the excuse, well, we believed it might have been from drugs. Now in Oklahoma, they have a little machine, a little handheld machine, that allows them to take all your credit cards right out of your wallet, put it in the machine, and withdraw all the money out of all your accounts. No one is talking about it. Why not? Now, people might think that's an extreme. Let me tell you extreme. Today I'm going to play you a short audio clip of what happens when a good Samaritan driving a car is about to exit a mall and sees a homeless person on the street and gives him $3. This will really surprise you. Also today we're going to listen to Native Americans about the Dakota Access Pipeline, stolen land, broken promises, genocide. We take on the issues that we believe are important. Let's begin. I'm opposed to artificial sweeteners because of what they can do to the body, especially the endocrine glands, to the hormone levels, and how much good science shows that this is a bad product. This is from the University of Sydney, published in PLOS One Journal. They analyzed 31 different studies on artificial sweeteners over a 40-year period. And what they found was this. University of Sydney researchers have confirmed widespread bias in industry-funded research into artificial sweeteners, which is potentially misleading millions of by overstating their health benefits. In the same week that the sugar industry came under fire for influencing the integrity of scientific research, this new comprehensive review of artificial sweetener studies reveals that reviews funded by artificial sweetener companies were nearly 1,700% more likely to have a favorable outcome. Quote, it's alarming to see how much power the artificial sweetener industry has over the results of its funded research, with not only the data but also the conclusions of these studies emphasizing artificial sweeteners' positive effects while neglecting to mention any drawback. The results of these studies are even more important than the conclusion, as the actual results are used in the development of dietary guidelines. So in lay language, it comes down to this. Artificial sweeteners are dangerous. Yes, there's no calories in them, and that's their so-called benefit. But we also know from a recent expose in the New York Times that Harvard University researchers were paid cash to fudge the results of studies that took the blame away from sugar being a cause of health problems and putting it on fat. This was intentional malfeasance. This meant that there was intent to deceive, and yet these people will not be affected. That's unfortunately what happens today. So now you look at artificial sweeteners, which a lot of people began to use because they didn't want the calories that came from eating sugar. And we were told, oh, there's no calories, it's good for you, there's no problem, and these were lies. There are hundreds of studies showing there are problems with artificial sweeteners. But if you paid for the study, then you're going to have a more likely positive outcome that is reported to the public. Whether it was positive or not, they lie. Now, on top of that, we have how many journals take advertisements from drug companies or sugar companies to promote a product. How likely is it that the editors of that medical journal or scientific journal will jeopardize a major portion, if not the majority, of their income by showing its defects? So stay away from the artificial sweeteners, because you can't trust the science that's being reported. From Colorado State University, nine of ten teens don't get enough exercise. 90%. 90% of U.S. high school students don't get enough exercise to stay fit and healthy, and the pattern persists after they graduate. And they followed a group of high schoolers for 4 years and found that only 9% met the very weak recommendations for how much time they exercised. So imagine what happens. Here's what happens. You begin to lose muscle tone. You begin to overaccumulate fat in the liver, especially non-alcoholic fat, the kind of fat that comes from high-fructose corn syrup, the soft drinks, for example. That is a killer. And upwards of 40% of all adults have non-alcoholic fatty liver. And remember, the liver is where you cleanse the body of all of its toxins and metabolize all of its nutrients. So you're not going to get the quality of metabolic activity and absorption, utilization that you normally would have. You're going to become more toxic because it's like stuffing up a toilet bowl. You may have to go to the bathroom, but if the only place you can go is an already full toilet, then that's not healthy. So when you're going to be eating every day and drinking every day liquids, the body has to purge these out of the system. If you're causing problems with that filtration system, because in effect, the liver is your septic system, then you're going to have what I call autotoxemia, meaning building up toxins in the blood and the cells. So you're ending up with poor body chemistry, less muscle strength. And why? Because more often than not, those teenagers, and after college, during college, people are watching television or at their computers. They're sitting. And every single study shows that the more you sit, the shorter your lifespan. You should never sit for more than 2 hours at a time without standing, exercising your legs, even if it's just to, you know, just to walk up and down an aisle, to do some deep knee bends, to do some push-ups, do something to exercise the body to keep the body muscle moving and the blood circulating properly. But we're not doing it. Now, then you look at Finland, you look at Denmark, and they don't emphasize homework. They emphasize being attentive and learning in school, being outdoors, playing outdoors, relating to nature, relating to one another. And they have the highest educational standards and the outcome in the world. And we, on the other hand, we load kids up with a lot of homework. They don't pay attention in class. In fact, many teachers today are prevented from intervening when a student is on texting and paying no attention to class. In fact, I spoke with a teacher who told me that when she asked a student to please put her cell phone away, the student became belligerent and said she wouldn't, didn't have to. Next thing you know, the mother of the student came in there yelling and screaming at the teacher, and then the teacher was reprimanded, and finally, teacher said, I've just had enough of teaching. Can't do it anymore. I'm not helping anyone. The kids control the classroom. The whole system is broken down. This is what a person told me, a teacher, 25-year teacher. didn't used to be that way. But let's just say you are a teacher. Well, I'm a teacher. I don't teach in high school. I teach in college. And HAP, Pratt Institute, New School for Social Research, and others, Fairleigh Dickinson. And I can tell you that the one thing you need as a teacher, you need kids' attention in class. You need to be able to engage them. You need to be able to have a dialogue to see, are they understanding? Are they able to not just understand what you're talking about, but how can they see them using that in a constructive way? That feedback is important. If you walk into a class and everyone's on a, you know, got their earplugs in and they're just in class because they have to be in class, but they're not learning anything, then where is there going to be time for them to learn? Under what context are they learning? They're not going to learn at home because they're not going to be exercising. They're not going to be engaging in constructive things for their body or mind. So you have to look at all the pieces, and there are many pieces to this puzzle, of getting kids to exercise and to pay attention. From the American College of Sports Medicine, this article talks about the risk of viral infections, which is known to be affected by physical activity. But little information is available regarding the more serious infections caused by bacteria. In this study, investigators examined the relationship between leisure time physical activity and suspected bacterial infections during a one-year follow-up. And what they came to understand was that the more physically active you are, the lower your risk of bacterial infections. That's terrific news. And they were looking at infections like cystitis, which is urinary tract bacterial infection, and compared it to when you're exercising and you're active and you're not. Far more likely to have cystitis if you're not active. And for those of you in this audience who have been concerned about chronic fatigue or adrenal exhaustion because of stress, overworking, not getting enough rest, that stress is linked to six of the leading causes of death. Now, I'm not saying that. That's the American Psychological Association. Now, that to me is not startling. Because long ago, at the beginning of my career, I had the opportunity to meet two remarkable human beings. One was Hans Selye, Dr. Hans Selye. He was considered the father of stress therapy. And from his work, Dr. Lawrence LeShan, who did the studies that could predict in completely healthy younger women how many of them would develop cancer, the breast, later in life. No one had even speculated that was possible. How could you know who's going to get breast cancer if you're dealing with a healthy woman today and you're projecting 25 years from now? They thought that was just alchemy. But it wasn't. He was right. Dr. Gerald Kessler followed up on that work. Others followed up. And then a whole body called psychoneuroimmunology began to evolve. Today there are thousands of studies proving that your emotions at any given time will directly and immediately impact your health. So if you walk around tense and anxious, angry or rageful, depressed or fearful, insecure, you're creating the very foundation of diseases because you're dealing with distress. And distress creates what is called a negative cascade of hormones, meaning adrenaline shoots up. That exhausts your adrenal glands. Hence, people who are stressed are always going to be more fatigued. It also creates a greater probability of having heart disease and cancer and neurological damage because these stress hormones like cortisol are also pro-inflammatory. They can really play havoc in your brain. And then you die sooner. It's just that simple. And we're just not dealing with this. I believe there should be a program in every school in America, every high school, every graduate school, every college school, having a course in the role of stresses in your life and what to do about it. Even having programs like mindful meditation and creative writing and things that we know can bring ourselves to a more relaxed, calm, peaceful state of mind. Now, how chronic stress can cause disease symptoms, the fact is that about 90% of doctors' visits are directly related to stress. Yes, that means that going to the doctor for your frequent headaches or inability to sleep or your acute pains or chronic anxiety may all stem from chronic stress issues. Unfortunately, medicine is not the answer. If you think about the fact that more than half of doctors' visits today are due to stress, stress may be the root of more causes of disease than you could imagine. And yet it's there. Now, how does stress increase inflammation, increase hormone imbalance? An impaired HPA axis may be an influencing factor behind the development of autoimmune diseases, even inflammatory conditions. And cortisol that I just mentioned, secretion, is another major reason why stress is causing many modern-day diseases. And while it's normal to experience moderate amounts of stress in life, it's the chronic everyday stress that's going to lead to a steady release of cortisol, leading to cortisol overload. And when cortisol is relentlessly being released, the body becomes desensitized to this hormone, which can cause large amounts of inflammation in the body. Now, we should all know by now that inflammation is responsible for 8 out of 10 of the leading causes of disease today. And what you have there is a domino effect. The chronic stress causes constant cortisol secretion, which causes the inflammation, which causes the chronic disease symptoms. And one day you end up with an acute symptom. And so you go to the doctor. They're looking at the symptom. They're not looking at the cause. So throwing the body out of a state of harmonic balance, a biochemical balance, can lead to chronic disease. So stress causes an imbalance in both the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous systems and causes an imbalance in nearly every other process in the body. And so therefore adaptogens, adaptogens, A-D-A-P-T-O-G-E-N-I-C, these are herbs. Now they've been around for thousands of years. And what they do is they help the body along with meditation and walking, for example, or just taking a hot bath, listening to soothing music, being in nature, petting and loving your favorite companion pet. These all help combat the negative effects of stress. But adaptogens can improve your mood, improve your energy levels, reduce the number of chronic diseases, and even improve the length of your lifespan. Now, let me just give you a couple. One is ashwagandha, ash, A-S-H, wag, G-W-A-G, anda, A-N-D-H-A. And this is one of the more popular and well-known adaptogenic herbs, and it improves overall strength and endurance. It's been used in Ayurvedic medicine as a healing tonic. It improves endurance, stamina, immunity, and even promotes longevity. And so it's a big important one to use. Then you have cordyceps. Cordy, C-U-R-D-Y, seps, C-E-P-S. It's a medicinal mushroom. It's used in traditional Chinese medicine. And we know that mushrooms are known for their immune-supporting properties. And we've known this for a long time. So it's no surprise that cordyceps may be helpful in boosting immune function for those facing chronic stress. Then holy basil. That would be also called Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I. It's been used for thousands of years in Ayurvedic medicine. It's an adaptogenic herb, and it's helping the body cope with stress by reducing oxidative stress. It can help maintain normal cortisol levels, and it has a calming effect. So if you have anxiety or depression, holy basil is really good. Then we have rhodiola, rhoda, R-H-O-D, iola, I-O-L-A. Rhodiola is another adaptogenic herb, and it balances the stress response in the body. So when you're in chronic stress, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous systems can be thrown out of balance, putting you on edge and burning out your adrenal glands. This helps the body reach a state of homeostasis or balance. So these, along with ginseng, are all good if you're out of balance. And a big study, what's called a meta, which means many studies, from University School of Medicine, China, it looked at, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Gastroenterology Research and Practice, found that the omega-3 fatty acids are terrific for non-alcoholic fatty liver. And I just mentioned earlier in the program, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And so you want to make sure that you're getting, I would say, between 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams of the beneficial omega-3 fatty acids every day. And finally, from John Hopkins University, progesterone may help protect the lungs during flu season. And that's a brand new report published in the journal PLOS ONE, Pathogens, describes the role of the hormone progesterone, and we know that it reduces inflammation and improves lung function, especially following infection with influenza or the cold. From the study, quote, epidemiological and experimental evidence suggests that young adult females suffer a worse outcome than males following influenza A virus infection. Then it goes on to talk about how they did this research to show that this would make a difference. So, the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of our new listeners from all over the world. Hopefully you had a chance yesterday to use the phone number that I give you, because one of our local sister stations that I've been on for 40 years had an outage of its internet, and as a result, my program was not aired live on WBAI in New York. And today that's been corrected. However, this is one more reason why, as long as you have a phone number or access to an internet, you don't miss my program, because we're live Monday to Friday, noon to 1, Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour, and starting next week, not today, but a week from today, I'm going to be reintroducing TalkBack. I haven't done it in 4 years. I did it, for 30 years with Dr. Martin Feldman every Sunday night. And it was a lot of fun. No guest, no commentary, but just a whole hour of talking with people in the audience and getting their emails. If they don't call in, they'll send the emails. So we address these issues, and we select the issues that would impact everyone in the audience. So I'm looking forward to that. That starts a week from today at 8 o'clock at night, following the Progressive Commentary Hour. But now that you saw what happens when you tune on and there's a problem, please take down this number. And I'm giving you different numbers. So if one's overloaded, which can happen, you'll have other numbers. All these numbers get you on. All right? Here's today's number. And add this to the others. 302-781-8198. Again, 302-781-8198. But let's say that you don't have a telephone and you do have access to computer, just go to the progressiveradionetwork.com and you can listen. But let's say you can't listen and you're not near a computer, but at night you can pick up a phone. You can either use a computer, fine, or a telephone, any listening, portable listening device, and you can call and download the show you missed, or download any of the shows you've missed from my archive. Here's that archive number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. That's for the archive number. Yesterday, because we get real figures in real time, we had almost 2,000 additional people coming in on telephones and over the internet from our sister station. So it gives you an idea of the size of the audience. Now, I'm going to share my thoughts on, and by the way, I'm back in the studio, so if you want to watch the program, go to Ustream channel, that's U, the letter U-S-T-R-E-A-M, TV, and search for Gary Knoll. So I'm back in our studio, so I'll be video streaming each day. I'm going to share my opinion, then I'm looking forward to hearing yours. I thought the entire debate was one giant embarrassment for America. You have, in my personal opinion, two classically defined sociopaths and probably one of the world's premier narcissists. He reminds me of a 14-year-old who is spoiled, rotten, cares about no one, but believes that everything he says must be taken as a gospel. Where did they fail? Well, let's go back and forth. Trump on climate change. He doesn't believe climate change. Gee whiz, that doesn't surprise me. But he does believe that nuclear war is a greater threat. Both are greater threats. We should take both equally seriously. For example, global warming had over 120,000 unique episodes in the last 12 months. We've had seven once-in-500-year events in the last year. For example, the flooding of Louisiana. Now, if Trump had gone down there to hand out stuff, fine. But when was the last time in his career or life that Trump ever went into a distressed area during a disaster to hand out anything? Or when did he give any of his millions of dollars to buy food for those, or lodging, or some help for those, clothes, for people who are in a stress situation due to a natural disaster? The messages couldn't be clearer. Here we have three of the worst typhoons in world history ever recorded this summer. Here we have the first time ever three Category 5 hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico and one in the Pacific at the same time. Here we have the people of Louisiana not having flood insurance because there was no history of flooding. As a result, in one parish, more than 80,000 homes were destroyed with no insurance to rebuild. So how are they supposed to live? They can't live in the homes. Once they're destroyed, they'll become overcome with mold. If you've ever been to Louisiana, and I was recently in Louisiana, it's humid all the time. And they also have to have permits, and they can't get permits unless they have the proper codes being met for construction there. So it's one giant mess. And yet the world has moved on for that. What about the rising sea levels? Those are not a hypothesis. These are real. And so global warming is real. The fact that all the leading scientists and climatologists have so stated doesn't make it any less so because of the propaganda machine. But all you had to do is look behind the scenes and say, who is out there saying that global warming is not real? Not the Rush Limbaughs or Sean Hannitys. I'm talking about the people paying the think tank people who advise these people. So it's the advisors who are telling these people what to believe. But nuclear is bad. Now, when asked who would use a preemptive strike, Trump said no, he wouldn't. Hillary didn't say. But Hillary Clinton is known for being pro-first strike on everything. And from one of Trump's tweets a couple of years ago, quote, the concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese in order to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive. That's an exact quote. That man is close to being moronic, and it's unfortunate. Hillary has continued to refer to climate change as the greatest threat, but does not do a single thing to criticize the private industries, in particular, who are controlling climate change, including fossil fuel. She is 100% behind coal, oil, gas hydrofracking, and nuclear. All of those are major contributors to climate change. She is for a meat-based diet. Climate change, 18% of climate change's effects are due to the heat of methane, which is 22% more powerful, times, I should say, more powerful than CO2. And yet she has also been a big booster with 44 separate email texts that were discovered where she was promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Trump said on Trans-Pacific Partnership that he is against it, but I don't think he has the intellect to understand why to be against it. He's looking at the deal. You cannot change the outcome of the Trans-Pacific Partnership because the very basis, the foundation of the Trans-Pacific Partnership is it takes away all state rights, all country rights, all sovereign rights. Therefore, if there's an adjudication that's required, let's say that someone in France develops an herbicide that is so toxic that the science shows it should be banned, we ban it, they can sue us for lost profits, and it would not go to any court in America. The Supreme Court could not hear it. Judicial review could not become involved. It would be arbitrated by lawyers working for major multinational corporate sponsors of the same treaty, and they would favor the plaintiff bringing the action. So our entire sovereignty, our entire Constitution, our entire Bill of Rights, all of our environmental laws, all of our human rights, all of our labor laws, all of those would be considered abrogated to this. This is NAFTA on massive steroids. Now, was NAFTA bad? Yes. And it was Clinton who sponsored NAFTA. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that you were the co-president with your husband because you want to get people to believe that you have experience, and indeed that was the case, and at the same time say, well, that was my husband's bill. No, it was your bill. And you said you were pro-union. Everything that the Clintons have done has been anti-union. Then they both supported NATO. I believe in her case, it's disingenuous. In his case, he's just too dumb to sit and figure it out, unless you have an erector set and you do it in blocks so he can understand it, maybe at that level, because the man functions at an infantile level. He is an embarrassment to everything that I can imagine. But she is more treacherous, and hence ultimately more dangerous. Why? Because NATO was formed after World War II. With Western nations involved, there were 11, after the Soviet Union detonated its first atomic bomb. Its chartered mission was to settle international disputes in peaceful means. That's its actual charter. Today, it has morphed more into a standing army that pretends to be involved solely in peacekeeping, never brings peace. Rather than saying its mission's accomplished and disbanding what it has to do, meaning it should self-dissolve, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and that's where it should have ended. NATO should have stopped in 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed. It didn't. It actually expanded. Now it has drone surveillance and warfare command funded by the Pentagon. NATO runs on the Three Musketeer principles, all for one and one for all. If any member country is attacked, then all the others come to its defense. In principle, this is the recipe to keep perpetrating wars and conflicts by increasing its membership and assuring there is an enemy, which is Russia, which Russia is not its enemy. In recent years, it has run into problems among European allies, mostly notably Germany. It has been a failure in all modern instances. Yugoslavia during the Clinton terms, it was an aggressive military adventure contrary to its charter. And look at the truth behind the Yugoslavian war. And look at the Clintons and what they did, from depleted uranium to lying about its causes to saying that we were supporting the good guys and when we were actually supporting terrorists. Trump was correct according to a Congressional Research Service document. U.S. taxpayer provided an enormous amount of funding for NATO. NATO is a criminal organization, should be completely disbanded. Clinton sees NATO as a force for furthering a new Cold War with Russia, which she continues to harp on. At no point was it brought to anyone's attention that Hillary Clinton was the mastermind behind, in the State Department, using the CIA and the Pentagon behind the coup in Honduras, which destabilized a democratically elected government. She was also supportive of the attempted coup in Yugoslavia. She was an adamant opponent of Hugo Chavez. She was behind the coup in Ukraine, and making the Russians look as if they were wrong. They were not. She was the architect of Libya. And just keep this in mind. Go back and do some homework. Look at Libya in the last 10 years. Look at the years since the fight of the NATO, which was controlled by both the United States, Great Britain, Italy, and France. All because they wanted, according to WikiLeaks, parts of the country and its resources. Libya was the safest country in Africa. It was the most prosperous country in Africa. It had the highest literacy rate in that entire part of the world, including more than Israel. It had the best medical system. It had the most advanced educational standards. And it had the largest public works water project in the world, on the planet. And this was to benefit not just Libyans, but also hundreds of millions of Africans who did not have water. It also had the most protections for women, and women could not be assaulted, women could not be abused. Even to verbally abuse a woman in Libya could get your butt in trouble. You could practice any religion you wanted in Libya. It was very secular, very progressive, and decisions were made at the local committee level. That's democracy. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Libyans on a weekly basis would vote on things that they wanted or didn't want, and they had the final rule. They frequently overrode Gaddafi. And this has nothing to do with Gaddafi. I'm trying to explain, you can like or dislike Gaddafi, but the fact is, in a bloodless coup, he ran the country 40 years. We also found out that he was not responsible for the Lockerbie bombing. Two separate documentaries have proven that. And yet sanctions were brought against him supposedly for that. That doesn't make him a prince. It just means that, unlike some other heads of state, the people benefited. If you got married, you got thousands of dollars. You had a baby, you got thousands more. You needed an apartment, you got an apartment. You needed a house, you got a house. You needed a car, you got a car. Gasoline was 15 cents a gallon. And it was safe. You could walk anywhere. There was no violence. There was no unemployment. There was no terrorism, because they were hard on terrorists. It was called the Paris of Africa. Why isn't anyone looking in the democratic element at what Libya was? So if you say you're for rights, women's rights, children's rights, then look at all those refugees, look at those dead by the tens of thousands, look at the displaced by the millions, look at the mess, and now look at ISIS. Now, Trump was wrong. It was not Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama who created ISIS. That was George Bush. Go back to Abu Ghraib. Go back to the prison system in Iraq. Go back to the illegal detention. Go back to the houses being broken into in the middle of the night, people shot, girls raped. Go back to the fact you could do anything to an Iraqi and get away with it. Go back to complete lawlessness. Go back to the dominant manifest destiny of the ultra-alpha male who could do what he wanted, knowing that he could not be sued, he could not be fined, he could not be punished. And for years, that was the doctrine. So many of the ISIS members, as has been shown, have come from the prison system. Would they have become a member of a radical group had they not been arrested? What about the children that were destroyed? What about the drones that have killed 90% of all drone strikes kill innocent people? 90%. You look at all the refugees. Those are not poor refugees from the Sudan, from Ethiopia, from Chad. No. Those are refugees from Libya, Syria, and Yemen. 3 million into Europe. Now, did anyone ask why not a single one of the perpetrators of in the Middle East have taken in refugees? Saudi Arabia's taken no refugees. Qatar, no refugees. United Arab Emirates, no refugees. Kuwait, no refugees. Yet they all participated in the destruction of Libya. That doesn't even come up. And you talk about ISIS being funded, Turkey funded, protected, and armed and trained ISIS and al-Nusra and other terrorist groups. Saudi Arabia funds over 17 different known terrorist groups. And who says they fund terrorist groups? An email from Hillary Clinton given with WikiLeaks. So how is it that a known provider of terrorists in the world and in the Middle East is our ally, two of our allies, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, and yet not a word about that because of how much money arms makers make? No discussion of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, although foreign policy is not on the agenda on this debate. Even if it crept in, it would be deterred. Why? Because all presidential candidates in history, Hillary has had the longest and closest public engagement record with Israel and has had the loyalty of Jews, winning through the Jewish vote against Sanders in the primary, and publicly supports U.S. financial aid for the IDF and has criticized other nations who argue to boycott, divest, or have sanctions against Israel for its war crimes. Well, we all want peace. We want peace for the people of Israel. We want the Jews to live in peace and harmony. We want the Palestinians to live in peace and harmony. And they did for a long period of time. But under this regime, under the Likud, under Netanyahu, that isn't the case. It will not be discussed. And with Trump, you don't know where he stands on this. And with Iran and nuclear weapons, Clinton out and out lied. She said, oh, you know, well, they were only within a year of getting a nuclear weapon. Not true. And no one could know what they were doing. Not true. The International Atomic Energy Commission has had cameras in every single one of their laboratories, have regular inspections, have lock and keys on all the different elements within their system, and they were not near creating a nuclear weapon. They weren't producing nuclear weapons. Their centrifuges were not producing high-grade plutonium that would have allowed that. And she would have known that. So exactly which countries have Iran invaded that make him a threat to be surrounded by over 60 U.S. military bases surrounding Iran? Let's see. We'd have to go back 241 years. So they haven't invaded one in 241? No. Did Iraq invade Iran? Yes. Who is being supplied with intelligence, satellites, reconnaissance, and arms? The United States. So the United States, by proxy, invaded Iran in an eight-year war that left over 1 million Iranians dead. Yes. Wonder why they might not trust us. And then talking about espionage and cyber espionage, gee, what happens when we no longer have an intellectual capacity to understand the issues? Fact. It is not Iran who was hacking the United States. It was the United States and the National Security Agency hacking every single governmental agency in the world. We were getting everyone's emails, including Merkel's personal phone calls were being tapped. Everyone we were tapping, sorting, collecting, analyzing data. Illegal, we were doing it. But we couldn't criticize ourselves. Then we had a program, secret program, between the Mossad, which is the equivalent of their CIA in Israel, and the U.S. National Intelligence Agency, to creep a malware that would go into the Iraqi centrifuge program, and it would be so unique that it would not have a trail. No one would know where it came from, but it would change the dynamic in the technology of centrifuges, causing them to overvibrate and explode. But when the Iranians were looking at their computers, they would see normal, therefore thinking something in their construction or design was at fault. So many of these centrifuges were destroyed, and yet Iran did not suspect that it was anything from the outside. So then, two people were looking at the problem, and they found, and these are two of the smartest guys in America, in looking for hidden malware, viruses, bugs in computers, they found it. And they wrote about it. But they also found something else that no one knew existed, not even the national intelligence agencies, not the CIA. No one knew that the Mossad, Israel, had gone ahead and planted a second malware. And it's the second malware that should be the aha moment. It was meant to turn off all the electricity in Iran. And you wouldn't be able to turn it back on. You'd have to replace all the implements that would allow a whole new electrical grids, electrical panels, because it would burn out everything. Why would you want all the electricity in a country turned out unless you intended to bomb it and you were on a 1,300-mile flight to get your bombers in there? And what kind of bombs are you going to use? You know that they've got 1 million people under arms. You know they've been planning on being attacked. You know that you assassinated their top nuclear scientist. You know that you've been sabotaging them. They know. So you would have had to have used nuclear. Now, Israel has signed no peace pact. It has about 200 nuclear weapons, according to Colin Powell. And they would have gone in there, I believe, and nuked not just a bit of Iran, not just its nuclear facilities, because then they would be faced with 84 million people outraged. So they would have just nuked the whole country. And the person who would defend them would be Hillary Clinton. She would be concerned, of course, and she would go through and give us her suddenly serious Hill and Billy and Hill face. You know, we're really sorry for all the innocent people. The 84 million people who were innocent of any crimes in Iraq, but that's just collateral damage. Let's go on now. Now we have peace in the Middle East. You're not going to go after Iran unless you're going to take it down 100%, because the consequences of just taking out its nuclear doesn't deal with all of its capacity for its retaliation. So Iran then is going to go into every single oil field, gas field in the Middle East and detonate them. They're going to be a massive sabotaging when Iran is finally attacked. I'm assuming this. It is only what you would do if you were attacked by someone who intended to take you out completely. And the United States is going to back you up. That's what happens if Hillary's elected. I predict within 4 years, Iran will be attacked by Israel. But this was all leaked. And as a result now, Iran, China, and Russia all are now way up on getting into that game and are protecting themselves and probably have planted malware in the United States. You see, you don't have to plant it everywhere. You just have to plant it in the right places. And since they have some of the smartest people in the tech industry in the world in China and Russia, far ahead of us, what would they take out? What would you take out if you were going to attack the United States with cyber warfare? You'd take out the nuclear facilities. If you turn off the power in the United States and the nuclear plants only have 1 week to a maximum of 4 weeks of backup supply, then we're not going to be able to get the electric back on in 4 weeks. If all electric goes out, all computers out, all telephones, everything's out, all satellites out, trouble is those nuclear plants are going to go off. Fukushima's everywhere. Well, you can just kiss 20 million New Yorkers goodbye. They're gone when that happens. Oh, and all the people in Los Angeles, they're gone when the Diablo Canyons explode. And all around, you have 100 nuclear plants going off in the United States. You're going to kill about 80% of the American population. They'll be dead within a year. And all that because we're not willing to say no to the very people who are capable of doing this without thinking of the consequences. So you better be concerned about nuclear, and you better be concerned about cyber warfare. And to the idea that the police violence, not once did I hear him talking about what is the actual cause of violence of the police towards anyone, white or black, but also why didn't anyone talk about a program to de-ghettoize America, to go into the ghettos and ask, what do you need to live a better life, to have healthier, happier kids, to help prevent gangs from being recruiting your children? What do you need? People need work. Then why don't we put rebuilding infrastructures of all these major cities as a high priority and hire people from the inner cities to do it? Why don't we build not plazas for up-and-coming young 20, 30-somethings who can, you know, have a good job possibly and can afford nice housing, but why don't we have rentals where you cannot sell it, and it can only be at 15% of a person's annual income. So no matter how poor you are, if you're on welfare, you still have affordable housing. But in that same housing, you must also include counseling services, medical services, also gardens and workshops to learn trades and culture, music classes, singing classes, experimental television, sports arenas. You could do all that, and you could put 5 to 10 million people back to work just with de-ghettoizing America. Then you could start a civil conservation corps, a new one, what FDR did, and you could put at least 5 million people planting, because that saves the planet. The more trees you plant, the more carbon sinks you have, the safer it is for everyone, a better world to live in. You could also start to appreciate that over one half of all the businesses and employees in the United States work for small business people. Not major corporations, not the government, but small businesses. And you could start to understand what a bubble in the commercial real estate market means to all those people who have businesses and are going out. Over 134,000 small businesses have left New York in the last 10 years because they can't afford the rent. Now, almost every block, all you see is a mall store or a bank or drugstore. Small businesses can't afford it. Why don't you stop allowing the lobbyists for the realtors to come in and start looking at how can we bring back revitalized neighborhoods? You can get out of all these agreements. Get out of the World Trade Organization, get out of GATT, NAFTA, CAFTA, get out of all of them. You can also outlaw the kind of nonsense that goes on, like all the kids that go in for counseling in the inner city all end up on psychiatric drugs. And one of the side effects of psychiatric drugs is acute psychoses. In fact, I spoke with someone, very famous person, who said they were going through a tough period and they decided to take an antipsychotic medication and they end up, quote, "Gary, I felt like killing people." That's what this person told me. And this is a well-known person, everyone in this audience. And person lost a relationship because of it and finally weaned themselves off this drug and said, "My God, it was the drugs that are causing." You were right, Gary. Over 95% of all the mass murders in the last 20 years have been on these antipsychotic or antidepressant medications. We're not willing to look at that because the pharmaceutical industry has too much control over what the media says as the cause. So you've got to deal with the reality. You should have police officers who are first in the communities from where they're living. So let them police in the communities. There should also be, with the police out there, there should be civilian members who walk with the police, drive with the police, and are there to de-escalate. So before a cop gets out of a car and says, "You got a broken headlight, now I got to shoot you in the face," and of course we're going to get out of it because we'll say, "I felt threatened," there'll be a citizen from the neighborhood saying, "You're not going to do that. I'm here." And that person helps de-escalate it. Common sense and reason. I forgot. These politicians don't work on that level of using it, and they should. They both want to expand the military-industrial complex. They're both illiterate on the subject. The United States spends more money each year on arming itself through over 200,000 different corporations involving millions of people, making enormous amounts of profit, and yet it's not needed. Shouldn't we put that money into de-ghettoizing America? Shouldn't we put that money into rehabilitating people, getting money back into quality educational systems and not in the corrupt educational system we have? Our entire educational system from top to bottom needs to be completely changed because the money that goes in, about $10,000 per student, goes to administration instead of to the school and to the student and to the teacher. We have to change our curriculums. They have been privatized for profit. The curriculums, the textbooks, the way it's taught, the testing, it's all corrupt. We're graduating functional illiterates. But we've got to take that money from the military-industrial complex. You could take away 80% of all money from the military-industrial complex, and we'd be a safer world, and use that money for our infrastructure, our roads, our highways, our inner city, our schools, and bringing jobs to America, living wages. Universal health care would be high up on that also. And yet, last night, there was an opportunity to show who was behind this, and it was the Glass-Steagall Act. It was CAFTA. It was NAFTA. It was the Future Commodities Trading Act. It was the World Trade Organization. It was the putting prisons in place and privatizing them to get the vote and then loading them up with people of color. Clinton ran as a new Democrat, which meant that he targeted wealthier white voters more and failed to target the poor minority Democrats base, which he simply looked for granted. Hillary's doing the same thing. Now, Hillary is the new face of the new Democrat, a new Democrat who has also usurped military interest, the food interest, the big pharma, the big food industry, and the energy interest, which were once favorites of the Republicans. And this new shift to the new Democrat has probably contributed more to the rise of Washington ignoring the average citizen in the lower middle class families more than even the Republicans under Reagan and Nixon. I didn't think that was possible. The new Democrat essentially turned their back on unions while still pretending to support them and knowing that the top end of some of those unions were utterly unsympathetic to their own union core. They were into it themselves. Nothing like a photo op and a visit to the White House. And since the Clintons, the little person has gradually become more and more forgotten in Washington. Yeah, and also the trend in targeting blacks as drug offenders that continues today started under Clinton. When he left office, 90% of drug-related inmates were black. That was Bill Clinton. He could have stopped the entire war on drugs. He chose not to, and he was a phenomenal drug addict. Just ask any of the people, as I have, personally, who did drugs with him. All of his many partners, his women partners, or one of his inside circle people. The private prison system is a big giver to Clinton and Clinton Foundation. Hence, the government's penal budget escalates, and under Clinton was twice that of food stamps. So just ask, you gave more money to prisons than you did for food stamps. The fact is, when Clinton left office, the U.S. had the highest incarceration rate in the world. So those are some of the issues that I could take, and I could take a lot more. And the media, of course, is biased as ever, as slant as ever. I don't read any of the media anymore because I consider it just deplorable, as I do these candidates. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.